It's so interesting, right? How we value things. I mean, the choices we make, grabbing that latte in the morning or, thinking about retirement way down the line, it all boils down to how much weight we give to things right in front of us compared to, well, things off in the future. And speaking of fascinating stuff, you shared some materials about all this, a technical report about a new tool even.
Yeah, a new tool.
So I thought for this deep dive, we could really unpack some of these core ideas. We're talking behavioral economics here, demand and discounting. See what kind of gold we can mine from this report. What do you say?
Sounds excellent. The material you sent over, it gets at, well, something pretty fundamental about human behavior.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just about, like, having preferences for things. It's about, I guess you could say, the strength of those preferences, how they change based on all sorts of things. And like you said, it's not just theoretical. This stuff, it's everywhere, right?
Yeah.
From how people make decisions about what to buy to how we can design better ways to help people in healthcare, in social programs. So yeah, we're going to break it all down, make it super clear.
Okay, excellent. So I guess we can start with demand. The report, it uses this phrase, defending our reinforcement bliss point, even when the price changes.
Yeah. Reinforcement bliss point.
It sounds a bit like a science fiction concept, doesn't it?
It does, a little bit.
Can we maybe make it a bit more, down to earth?
Absolutely, yeah. Think of it like your favorite coffee, the one you get every morning. Say it's $4. You're happy with that, right? That's your routine, your bliss point, if you will.
That's my bliss point.
But then, the price goes up. $5, you might still get it. What if it goes to $7? You might start thinking twice. Maybe you look for a cheaper place. Maybe you only treat yourself once a week. That willingness to keep buying, even as the price climbs, that's what we're talking about with demand, is about how much you're willing to give up, in this case, money, to keep getting something you value.
I see. So even if the cost goes up, if we really value something, we'll still pay something for it. But of course, there's a limit, right? Like at some point, it's just not worth it anymore. And researchers actually try to measure this, right? How much we'll pay before we say, enough is enough.
Exactly. By measuring demand, we can figure out how much someone values something, a product, a service, or even, like you said, an activity. The report even mentions, this kind of analysis is used for things like excise taxes, those taxes on things we want people to maybe use less of.
Right, right.
Or even figuring out, in a clinical setting, how to use rewards effectively.
I see. Which all sounds like, some pretty intense number crunching. The report does mention, traditionally, to analyze demand data, you needed some specialized software.
Yeah.
Even some coding skills, right?
Right. It used to be you'd need to be pretty comfortable with statistical software, maybe even programming languages like R, to really dig into the data.
Mm-hmm.
That could be a barrier for a lot of researchers, practitioners who are experts in their field.
For sure.
But not necessarily, statistics whizzes.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's where this new tool comes in, ShinyBees. It's designed to, make these analyses a bit more accessible.
Yes.
The report describes it as, a free and open source web application.
Right. The idea behind ShinyBees is to make it user-friendly. You can do the analyses right in your web browser or even install it on your computer, and you don't have to write any code.
Okay.
So really, it's about giving more people access to these tools.
I like it. So what can ShinyBees actually do when it comes to demand analysis? I see a few features listed in the report here.
It's got a good range of capabilities. First off, it can handle different kinds of data.
Yeah.
You can upload data in different formats, like wide format, which you might get from a survey, or long format, where each observation is on its own row.
Okay.
And ShinyBees is usually pretty good at figuring out what format you've got.
Mm, that's helpful. That's definitely helpful. So once it's got the data, what then? It calculates, what are they called? Empirical measures. What are things like intensity, breakpoint, Omax, and Pmax? What did those actually tell us?
Think of them as like key indicators that sum up the demand for something. Intensity is just how much of something is consumed, when it's at the lowest possible price.
Mm.
Now, breakpoint. That's interesting. BP1 is the highest price someone's willing to pay to get any amount of the item, even just a tiny bit.
Okay.
BP0 is the price where they completely stop buying.
So BP1, that's that point where you're like, okay, it's pricey, but I'll still get it just this once.
Exactly.
What about Omax and Pmax?
Okay, so Omax is the most money someone spends on the item across all the different prices you've tested.
Right.
You get it by multiplying the price by the amount consumed at each price.
I see.
Pmax is the price where that maximum spending happens. And what's really interesting here is that Pmax, it also happens before consumption drops to zero, meaning people are often most willing to shell out the most at a certain price, a sweet spot, even if they might still buy some at a higher price.
That is interesting.
It's not just about wanting the most of something. Mm. It's also about where that sweet spot for spending actually is.
Okay. Now, there's also this thing about identifying systematic data sets using these criteria from Stein and colleagues.
Right.
Why is it important to know if your data is systematic?
It's all about making sure your findings are solid.
Mm-hmm.
Those criteria help researchers find data that makes sense, basically.
Yeah.
You know, as the price goes up, consumption goes down.
Yeah.
It's what we usually expect with demand.
Right, right.
ShinyBees does these checks for you and tells you how much of your data fits that pattern.
Okay.
It gives you confidence that your results are, well, reliable. And the cool thing is it even lets you adjust those criteria if you need to, depending on what you're researching.
Very cool. So it's not just blindly crunching numbers. It's helping you make sure the numbers are actually meaningful. And then it gets into these, what are they called? Nonlinear models, fitting them to the demand data. That sounds pretty complicated. What's the point of doing that?
So these models, they use math equations, you know, like the ones mentioned in the report, the exponentiated and the exponential options. Basically, they help you draw a curve that shows the relationship between price and consumption in the best way.
Hmm.
Imagine you have a few data points. The model helps you connect them with a smooth line. And even more importantly, it lets you predict what consumption might look like at prices you haven't even tested directly.
Ah, so you're basically creating like a predictive demand curve.
Exactly. And ShinyBees, it gives you different ways to fit these models. There's fit to group, pooled, which looks at all your data together.
Okay.
Then there's fit to group mean, which calculates the average consumption at each price for all your participants, and then fits the curve to those averages.
Mm.
And finally, there's two stage, which fits a separate curve for each individual in your data.
Okay.
It's like choosing whether you want to see the big picture, the average person's trend, or the individual patterns of everyone. It depends what you're trying to figure out.
I get it. And of course, it's not just about, you know, staring at tables of numbers, is it?
Yeah.
The report, it really highlights the visualization capabilities, you know, being mm-hmm. able to see those demand curves. I imagine that makes things a lot easier to understand.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Being able to see the curve, like how steeply it drops as the price goes up, that gives you a way better feel for what's going on in the data.
Yeah.
ShinyBees lets you customize these graphs, too, even using logarithmic scales, if that makes sense, for your data.
Cool.
And of course, you could export all this stuff, the visuals, the data, in different formats.
Great, great. Okay, so let's bring this back down to earth. Can you give me like a real world example of how someone might use demand analysis, maybe with ShinyBees?
Sure. Imagine a researcher who wants to encourage people to use public transportation more.
Okay.
They could use like a hypothetical scenario to test how much people want to ride the bus or train at different prices.
Uh-huh.
And the price could be the wait time, the travel time, or even the actual fare.
Right.
Then they analyze this data with ShinyBees and find the price points where demand really starts to drop.
Interesting.
That could help them design better policies or incentives to get more people on board, so to speak.
I like that.
Or in a totally different field, a therapist might use it to figure out how the price of doing a challenging but helpful therapy exercise affects their client's willingness to do it over time.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, so we've covered wanting. Now let's talk about discounting.
Okay.
The report describes it as the subjective devaluation of something based on things like delays or uncertainty.
Mm-hmm.
This is probably why I always go for the small dessert I can have right now instead of the bigger one I have to wait for.
That's it. That's the whole idea.
It's all about instant gratification.
Exactly. It's about how that future reward, even if it's objectively bigger or better, feels less valuable because it's further away in time, or we're not totally sure we'll even get it. Immediate gratification versus a maybe better but delayed outcome. Your dessert dilemma, that's a perfect example of delay discounting.
It is. It really is. And just like with demand, researchers want to put a number on this, right? How much do we devalue those future rewards? Why is that so important?
Well, putting a number on discounting, it helps us understand all sorts of things from impulsivity to risk-taking to how people plan for the long term, even how they stick to health routines. The report mentions this is relevant for stuff like public policy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do people respond to warnings about things like climate change, which are way off in the future.
Right.
And in clinical settings, understanding someone's discounting rate can help with interventions for things like addiction or procrastination.
Okay, got it. So again, I'm guessing these calculations are pretty complex.
They can be. Analyzing discounting data, it's had its own set of challenges.
So How does Shiny Bees help with this? The report mentions things like regression analysis, the monetary choice questionnaire, and the five-trial discounting task.
Yeah, let's break those down.
Okay.
When we talk about indifference point data, we're talking about finding the point where a smaller, immediate reward feels just as good to someone as a larger, delayed one.
Okay.
Shiny Bees can do what's called regression analysis on that data. You can choose different mathematical models to fit the data, like Mazur's hyperbolic equation, a popular one, or a simpler exponential equation.
Okay.
And just like with the demand data, Shiny Bees also checks if your discounting data is reliable, using these criteria from Johnson and Bickel.
Got it.
It looks for a consistent pattern. The longer the delay, the bigger the future reward needs to be for someone to choose it over the immediate one.
Makes sense.
And again, you can adjust these criteria if you need to.
So it fits the mathematical model, gives you a curve that shows how quickly value drops off over time.
Exactly. And it offers the same analysis options we talked about with demand: pooled, mean, and two-stage.
Right.
You also get visuals. These discounting curves, they clearly show how much that subjective value drops as the delays increase.
Oh, I see.
You can even use a log scale on the time axis.
Okay.
Which can help see things more clearly, especially with those longer delays. And of course, it gives you key stats. The K value, which tells you how fast someone discounts, and different ways to calculate the area under the curve, or AUC. That AUC gives you another way to estimate discounting without relying on a specific model.
Okay, got it. So that covers the indifference point data. Now, what about that questionnaire? The 27-item monetary choice questionnaire, or MCQ.
Right.
The report mentioned that one.
The 27-item MCQ, that's a standard questionnaire used to assess delay discounting. It gives people a bunch of choices between getting a smaller amount of money sooner or a larger amount later.
Hmm.
Shiny Bees can score these questionnaires automatically based on how people answer.
So much easier than doing it by hand. What kind of information does it spit out?
A few things. It gives you those K values again, an overall one and separate ones for small, medium, and large reward amounts.
Okay.
You also get what are called consistency scores, which tell you how consistent the person's choices were throughout the questionnaire. If the score is below a certain level, like 0.75, Shiny Bees will flag it.
Mm.
Could mean the data might not be super reliable.
Okay, that's useful. That's a good thing to know. The report also mentioned dealing with missing data in the MCQ. That's always a pain in research.
It is, but Shiny Bees has ways to handle it. If there are missing answers, it can use methods like, you know, filling them in based on the average response of the group, or even some fancier nearest neighbor methods.
Okay.
And to keep things transparent, if it uses these methods, it shows you the original data next to the filled-in data.
Good, good. Transparency is key. So what kind of output do you get for the MCQ analysis?
You get tables with all those K values, consistency scores, things like averages, correlations between the different K values, graphs showing how often people chose the sooner reward at different discount rates, and those box plots that show you the spread of the K values across your group.
Yeah.
It's quite comprehensive.
Very nice. Okay, last one in the discounting section, the five-trial task. What's that about?
The five-trial task, also called the minute discounting task, it's a super quick way to get a sense of someone's discounting rate.
Mm-hmm.
There are versions for both delay discounting, where the reward is delayed, and probability discounting, where there's a chance they might not get the reward at all.
Okay.
Shiny Bees scores the data from both of those.
Probability discounting. So that's how much less we value something if there's a risk we won't get it.
Right. So for the delay discounting version, Shiny Bees gives you the K value and what's called effective delay 50. That's the delay at which the reward's value is dropped by half.
I see.
For probability discounting, it gives you an H value, kind of like K, an effective E50, and an effective probability 50, which is the probability where the value's dropped by half. These tasks are great for getting a quick snapshot of someone's discounting tendencies.
So Shiny Bees is pretty powerful. It helps researchers study how much we want things and how time and uncertainty affect that desire. The report really highlights, you know, how great it is to have all these tools in one place.
Yeah, that's a huge plus. Researchers and practitioners, they can work more efficiently now. From entering data to analysis to visualization, it's all in one app. No more jumping between different programs or trying to make different tools work together.
Makes sense. And it's all built on existing open source R packages. Bees demand and Bees discounting. Why is that a good approach?
It's smart for a few reasons. It makes sure the calculations are based on well-established, tested methods.
Okay.
The results you get in Shiny Bees will match what you'd get using those R packages directly. Plus, it makes the app stronger and easier to update.
Mm-hmm.
When those R packages get improved or new features are added, they can be put into ShinyBees pretty easily.
Right.
And being open source means anyone can look at the code, which is good for transparency and making sure the results are trustworthy.
The report also mentions they're focused on data security, this ephemeral model. What does that mean for people using the app?
It means your data and the results, they're only stored temporarily while you're using the app. Close your browser, or if you're inactive for a while, all that data is deleted from the server permanently. Your data isn't stored long term, which is great for privacy and security, especially if you're working with sensitive data.
Definitely reassuring. And it sounds like there's a lot more to come with ShinyBees, even more features in the works.
Oh yeah, there's a lot planned. The report mentions things like adding more models for demand and discounting, giving you more control over the visualizations, support for more complex study designs, and even being able to analyze things like cross-price elasticity. That's how the demand for one thing changes when the price of something else changes.
Interesting.
They're also thinking about adding something called mixed effects models, which are for, you know, more advanced stats analysis, and even the ability to, like, look at, run, and save R code right inside the app.
Wow, that sounds really powerful. And it's an open collaborative project, right? They're inviting people to contribute through GitHub. That's fantastic. It'll keep growing, keep getting better based on what researchers need.
Right. Being open, it encourages feedback, lets the community contribute to development, and helps make sure it's around for a long time.
So, big picture, ShinyBees feels like a pretty big deal. It makes these important behavioral economics analyses more accessible, easier to use for a lot more people.
Exactly. By putting all these tools together in one place, making it free, open source, and intuitive, ShinyBees really has the potential to expand the use of these demand and discounting principles in research and in real-world applications.
So for you, the listener, hopefully this deep dive gives you a better grasp on how we value things and the really cool tools researchers are using to understand these fundamental parts of how we make decisions.
Definitely makes you think about all the behind-the-scenes stuff that influences the choices we make every day.
It does. It really does.
And it brings up a really interesting question, I think. If we make these powerful tools more accessible, how might that speed up our understanding of human behavior? Could it lead to better solutions for problems in the real world?
It's a good question.
What other complex analyses could benefit from a more user-friendly approach? Something to think about.
Absolutely. If you're interested in checking out ShinyBees yourself, the links from the report are, let's see, https.github.com for Brent Kaplan ShinyBees and https.brentkapran.shinyops.io/ShinyBees. And the developers, they encourage you to check out the welcome page and the documentation in the app. That's a good place to start.
Yeah. We hope this deep dive gave you some new things to think about. We'll be back soon with more explorations of, well, all this fascinating stuff.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for joining us.
And until next time.
See you then.